What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm in here with the OG of the show. Been with me since day one, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreads? How are you this morning?
What's up, man? I'm excited. I've been so busy doing other stuff. I finally did a show yesterday, and just sitting back and talking sports has been quite therapeutic, so I'm excited for our show today.
Yeah, man, we've been off the set. I was supposed to get in here last week and we were supposed to review the Super Bowl, but man, just that one week was feeling so good. I couldn't come in, as you see, Ceno still playing hooky, so we really enjoyed this time off, man, and give us a chance to kind of let our hair down, man, and do some of the things we want to do. It's a lot of time involved in Ben Sports, but we're so happy to be back in here with you on the Wagering World. Even though football season is finished, we still got a lot of basketball. We love college basketball. I did really well yesterday. Me and Hakeem were hanging out in the wind, cleaned the whole board, man, with 9-0 on college basketball yesterday. And the group had a 14 parlay. And then we also did really well this morning on tennis. Great morning. I shout out to people and I told them it was worth a snatch, just to invest a little bit on betting Clara Tosin against Sabalenka and also betting Yastrzemski against your girl Swiatek. And Yastrzemski plays a tough first set, loses the second set. She reminds me a lot of a young Ostapenko, so I know she troubles Swiatek. She hates playing girls who are really aggressive like that, especially on hard court. And Yastrzemski pushed her the first set, and she's beaten her before, so that was a good investment. But we hit the Tosin, man, at +500 against Sab. She ran through us. Tosin, if she could get healthy, could actually become a top 10 player. She has that type of power. Not a lot of movement, but she's sneaky, kind of good on defense. And Sabs, for some reason, I don't know why, Spread, they have Doha, and then they have the next week Dubai, both thousands, both masters. But the girls and the guys kind of drop their level when they get to Dubai. You notice that?
Yeah, it seems like it's too much, right on the heels of the Australian Open, too. So kind of just the problem with the season being too long. You can see that just like an NBA team, they kind of pick their spots sometimes. So certain people raise their level for the swing and other people just kind of treat it as a vacation. So Sabalenka probably chose vacation, right?
Yeah, because what I think? I think Doha, they kind of pushed because no one's really hanging too much over in Abu Dhabi as much as when they go down to Dubai. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more hanging. A lot of them very familiar there. Like, for instance, Pavlyuchova, she lives there a long time. She's been living in Dubai. So it's one of their favorites.
And in their little six-week off-season, you'll see a lot of them vacation there.
Yeah.
That's the place they want to be.
Yeah, so I think they like, hey, we'll take this L, go to my spot and hang for a little bit, and catch up on some things. Nothing wrong with it. I'm over here watching Greek sport, not play Berrettini. I took Greek sport. We'll see how that ends up. Like I said, lots to bet right now, Wagering World. So stay with us. We'll still be here on Wednesdays and Fridays. We'll try to get here three times a week as we get a little bit closer to March Madness and everything. But we cannot forget about reviewing the Super Bowl with you guys. Like, we're not going to duck that smoke. A lot of you guys in the chat were on the Eagles, and good job by you being able to cash that. Before we get into the past and talk about that, I just want to briefly talk about a lot of the hate that we were hearing on the Kendrick Lamar halftime show. I'm hearing a lot of people were tweeting out saying that rap was dumb and, this was silly, and a lot of ultra-conservative people that just was just dissing, that genre of music. And, man, I just don't get it why some people think that it's still their time Spread. Like, if you're 50 plus, and we're getting close to that, we're at our 40, so I wanted to also, get out the way, but I've already chosen that path to raise a family, enjoy, pop culture, and just kind of let the kids do it like when we were kids. When you're 16 to 35 is when you kind of create what's going on in America. It's always been like that. But nowadays, with science and with, the internet, with social media making people feel still young and stuff, where they act like kids on Facebook and things like that, people forget that even though you're like still looking good at 55 or 60 and you still have a great opinion, your opinion doesn't matter, man. It's about what the kids are on. And all the kids love Kendrick Lamar, man. I'm a huge fan of his. Listened to him a long time, kind of relate to him because, like myself, he's a kid that grew up in a really tough environment but still was always you know, a smart kid and tried to always stay positive, and the OGs looked out for him, and he did something great with his life. And for them to call rap stupid based on him only shows their stupidity, because how can you choose this guy of all to label rap as stupid when he has some of the most deepest, you know, lyrics that you're going to find? I've talked about a lot of topics. Of course, he likes to have fun. My kids love his music. They played at the daycare, the clean version of Not Like Us and TV Off. And for some reason, the kids really enjoyed it. It's about having fun. He brings that part too on some of his songs. But for the most part, all of Kendrick Lamar's career has been based on making really good music, quality music, sometimes above people's heads so much that he has to dumb down and do records like TV Off. So it's just weird that they choose him to say that this rap is dumb and horrible performance, when this was one of the most complex performances we've seen, and one of the brightest young artists in the world, brightest minds in the world, not just inside hip hop. The man has 22 Grammys and is a Pulitzer Prize winner. So that's a bad example to use. If you're going to say to talk about the Yin Yang Twins or something, don't say the Kendrick Lamar is stupid. You guys should have been mad maybe last year when they did the Snoop thing with Dr. Dre, because that's gangster rap. But Kendrick has always been like art at the highest level. Even that show, a lot of people don't know that it was a PlayStation controller that was the whole thing, and it was showing the game within the game. And people who come from that side of the track and comes from not having a lot of things in life and had to scratch their way up to get to what's the American dream kind of understood what he was talking about. He was showing how no matter what you do, Uncle Sam, who was played by Samuel Jackson, always has a saying, you know, you're being too ghetto. So he softens it down. He's like, yeah, that's more like it. And he tries to control him and make him play the game the right way. But at the end of the day, he shows by doing Not Like Us that I'm never going to be a guy who just follows the rules. I'm here to still represent where I came from. And that's what we're about on the way to where we do it for the underground and underdog. So I really felt that performance, and I really was disheartened by some of the stuff I heard on X. But old people, remember, you're old now. Even though you still feel good, you work out, I'm glad for you, man, because I'm doing the same thing. I'm taking care of myself. Step out the way and sometimes understand that it's a new generation. They tweeting out talking about, why don't they bring out Kenny Chesney and stuff? Like, what? What did you think about Kendrick Lamar's performance, Brett? I know that you're a big hip-hop guy and you've been listening to Kendrick a long time as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed the performance. For what you're saying about the negativity, and this isn't just social media. This goes back to the news back when we were kids. Negativity sells. If yeah. I got on there and I go, hey, you know, that's a pretty good performance, probably get 3 likes or retweet. If you get on there, this sucks, this is terrible, right? You're going to get 38 replies, 40 quote tweets, right?
One of them kicking in for you.
Yeah, so not surprised, but you mentioned us being older. I kind of did feel old because, like, so let's go back to last year's performance, right?
You're right.
Probably knew the words to almost every single song.
Yeah.
This year, I'm sitting there recognizing, like, this dude's a dope rapper. I mean, this is like high level hip hop, but I actually didn't know a lot of the songs.
He's the first underground artist that has crossed over to mainstream, but he's so highly, you know, has so much accolades that he was able to be placed there. And then he made the song with Drake. Like, Drake really messed up by bringing the light to him, because he was more like a kind of like how we are, man, on here. We're like, we're for the nerds, man. It's just, you know, like, people care about the art and come here and know about the words of the world. They know about our high percentage. They know we really know our stuff. But outside in the popular world, we're not really known, you know? And that's the same way how Kendrick was. He was just really a guy who was known by real artists until Drake, for some reason, had a bone to pick with him and made it. Well, now, you know, he wanted to make mainstream hits. And like, okay, so she's saying that it's all about the hits. Let me make some hits too.
Yeah. Highlight though, Serena Williams.
She brought it back from the
Olympics. She looks in shape, dude.
Yeah, she wouldn't have got herself together, and that's another.
She looks fit. She can make a little comeback right now. She can play some Indian Wells. She looks fit.
She's not playing. She's not playing.
She looks way more fit than when she was playing.
Yeah, but you know what happened? That's how social media works, negatively and positively. They were attacking her and saying so much about her weight on social media that she just went crazy. I don't know if she had a little bit from surgery or
the but other I know thing she's is she was rushing back to try and to play right away, and she was kept getting hurt.
Yeah.
I think that now that she's not pushing herself to play, she's not pushing herself in the gym, and she could do it the right way. But I was really excited to see it. To me, that was the highlight of the whole thing. Tennis nerd, right? That was my favorite part of the show.
I loved it. And it's simply because, like, Drake did say something about her, man, and her husband. It's like they did used to date. And, you know, it's a lot of things that was – it was so many dub entendres about that show, man. It was meanings within the meanings. But it was a great show. And if it was beyond your thought process, that's fine too, man, because it's been so many shows that I remember growing up watching where they had some popular rock group like Chicago or somebody, and I didn't know anything – they were singing, had never heard the songs, but guess what? It was okay. We still lived the next day. Sometimes it's not your generation anymore, man. And you have to understand, things change. Wage world, we got to always remember we're going to evolve or we're going to become extinct. Let's be smart enough to evolve with the times as long as they don't, disrespect your beliefs and your belief system. All right, man, let's go on and get to the past, Brent, and talk about this horrible Super Bowl for the wagering world.
Yeah, man, I mean, we got to come on here and eat our crow. And, yeah, we're a little late, but to be honest, that doesn't do the result. I'm sure if we won money, we might not even be back till next week.
Right.
So, all right, so my main takeaways, this was the 59th Super Bowl, so 108 times, only the fourth time that a team chose not to blitz. I mean, that was the key to the game. I knew we were done at 17-0. Yeah. A lot of people said, oh, in the second half, I knew it was over. I knew we were done at 17-0. A lot of the key to our handicap was going to be the Chiefs' ability to perform under pressure and for Spags and Mahomes to perform with the game on the line. If the Chiefs were going to lose, this was a blueprint you had to do it. You had to make sure there was no doubt, no magic there at the end. And so you got to give the Eagles credit. It was a team victory. I know the real MVP to me is Howie Roseman. I mean, when was the last time that guy missed on a draft pick?
Yeah.
And it was evident because they were deeper all around. And I want to hear your thoughts, but then I want to dial back to the one thing I said just about their ability to get the pressure without blitzing, because I'm wondering how that's going to affect the NFL draft. Talk to me about what you saw in that game then, and then I have a question for you off what we saw.
Just bad from the start. Andy Reid's weakness came back and showed its ugly head, and that's not protecting his quarterback, man, and throwing too much. They came out and ran six straight plays where they were throwing the ball, six straight dropbacks, not play action or anything like that. Very disappointing. Joe Tooney's finally exposed it. They've been hiding him all season long. He was completely an issue. And with them coming through the AFC, I guess that the Texans should have exposed them. And we really based our handicap on the fact that I thought that the Texans defensive line was equivalent or better than the Eagles. And it ends up that, no, the Eagles were a little bit better. And it wasn't a big change at all that was made by the Eagles' great defensive coordinator, who finally, gets one he deserves and well-deserved. He just did the same thing that we saw that was the handicap for Brady, and that was rush four and drop seven. It works against any quarterback. If everybody's covered and you have pressure within 3 seconds, you're not going to look good. We saw Mahomes lose his other Super Bowl in the same manner against Brady, against Tampa Bay, where the same thing reared its head, and that's not being able to block up the four pass rushers with five guys. And I remember Lance Zierlein told me, and I was so surprised. Remember, I came on the show, I was like, Lance is saying this is going to be a blowout. And I was like, what the hell? I guess he got the script. He works at it. He had the script already, because I did not envision the inability for Andy Reid and for Mahomes to make adjustments. Like, if you see they're getting an instant pressure, and we saw this with the Tampa Bay game, that's what makes you look at these games kind of sideways sometimes, man, because it just didn't make sense to me that you don't make any adjustments. You don't go to the screen game. You don't try to run the ball at all. And another thing that I remembered in this game that was huge was it was about to become a defensive struggle, I felt, and Kansas City's defense was ready to, like, we're not getting the best Mahomes tonight, not the best offense. We're going to have to step up and keep us in this game. And man, they got a bad call on a PI against, what was that? Was that against McDuffie? And he was, they called it a personal foul. He's going to make a play on the ball and the receiver's head comes down, reaching for the ball, and he accidentally makes contact and it snowballed after that. The Eagles end up scoring that drive with a touchdown pass to, it ended up being a touchdown pass to the goal line, but we ended up really getting lucky on that because Jalen Hurts scores a touchdown because they marked down the kid, Jahan Dotson, at the 1 yard line. So we were able to cash that one. We did really good on the props, but if I could do this game over again, spread, and it was pregame and I didn't know what I know now, I would still bet it the same way. And I can always live with that. When I say bad beat, bad break, bad handicap, this was neither. It just didn't go our way because we use data when it comes to betting. Mahomes had never lost in the dome before. he had always sold well against, you know, other great defenses. He had never lost to the number one pass defense in the NFL before. He had put 37 points up per game against them. So why would I think that something else different was going to occur this time, even though something different did occur? You know, so it didn't go our way, but I can always live with betting on the best. And as I gave you guys a little speech about on Ski Show, and hopefully, you know, you understand from the way that we bet that we didn't take a lump because we don't look at the Super Bowl as a game that we're going to go crazy on and bet our whole life on. Like, it's no different than any other game.
One unit.
Like, yeah.
Unit.
Yeah, maybe one.
To me, that's the same as Hornets Lakers.
Yeah, same exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So we lost that, but we did so well on the props that we were able to, you know, have a really great Sunday overall. Go ahead with the question you had.
All right. So
running to the kind of running by the props. Let's go over the props that we hit after you do that.
We know the NFL is a copycat league.
Right.
So I'm sitting there and I'm the GM of the Tennessee Titans. I got the number one overall pick. You had asked me before the Super Bowl, I said, oh, they're taking Cam Ward. No question.
Right.
Do I look at this game and say, you know what? Cam Ward might be a great quarterback, might not. Abdul Carter, unless he gets hurt, I mean, this is like a Will Anderson level prospect. Right. Yeah. To me, I mean, this is the best prospect I've seen since Will Anderson. I know it's only 2 years ago, right? But I mean,
yeah.
I think it's a great comp just on the idea. I don't think this guy's going to miss.
Yeah.
Is there a chance now that Tennessee goes for just the sure thing at number one? I mean, that could change. That could change a lot of the dominoes.
Don't forget Mike Green as well. Mike Green from Marshall is on the same level, just played on a smaller stage. So keep an eye on Mike Green. I think he's going to be an instant impact player, even though maybe it's because he wears the same number, but he kind of reminds me of Nick Batito from Denver. You know, the kid I'm talking about,
yeah.
Dick Benito, or however you pronounce his name, the number 15. They kind of play the same speed rushers that are very athletic and drop back in coverage, freak athletes. But as you said, Abdul Carter's different, man. Another guy, the number maybe is what it is. He just reminds you of Michael Parsons, you know, in the tradition of Arrington. All three of those guys started as inside linebackers at Penn State, but had the skills to play on the outside and rush as well. So Abdul Carter has a definitely bright future. Tennessee's in a conundrum, and the reason why is behind the scenes, nobody wants to play with them. And we already know, like, this is the stuff that goes on that we don't see. We talk about the game within the game. Unless you've really done business before and, you know, dealt with high stakes deals, you don't understand. There's a lot of stuff that goes on past what you see, you know, on TV that's revealed through the legacy media to you. And behind the scenes, Tennessee's getting a lot of pushback, man, because nobody really wants to be a Titan or a Brown. Like, they talking about Shadors on PlayStation playing with the Browns. That's just a tactic to try to make it where the Raiders can move up and grab him or whatever because he wants the prestige of going a little bit higher. And I'm sure that somebody's going to make a move because we're getting a lot of bad press on these quarterbacks. Cam, he's getting the bad press strictly because he hangs around some guys like Allen Iverson type situation, but now he's hanging more with Shador, and Shador's a good dude. And, you know, even though they move with the energy of the youth and on, you know, the hip-hop swag stuff, they're going to do right. So that's better for him. But his background in Houston and stuff, I think he got some family members that are kind of, you know, some street guys. And I think that a lot of teams have got word of that behind the scenes that he was hanging around that type of stuff, and they're worried about when they give him some money. As you see, by he has a really, you know, strong attitude, as we heard. He just did the interview and said that if you don't draft me, you're going to regret it. I'd be careful doing that if I was Cam, because the last guy that did that was Josh Rosen.
Josh Rosen, right? Yeah. That's the first thing I thought when I read that quote, too.
He didn't do too well. So be careful, man, but being arrogant. You know, like, you know, before, you know, the fall is always pride. So just kind of calm down, bro, and, you know, relax. We know that you can play. And I think Shador's is more just jealousy and hatred, bro. If the people involved didn't like his dad, they're not gonna like him, you know, because the way that Deion moves kind of offends certain people the wrong way. He doesn't do anything, he's just being himself, but some people feel like that, you know, they just don't like the guy. So since they don't like the guy, they don't like his kid. But anyone who watches football like we do, Spread, we've been talking about it for 2 years, like, Shador is everything that we talk about in having a franchise quarterback. One, he played amongst talent that wasn't that good against top talent, where he was taking an ass beating, wasn't getting blocking. He said one thing at that interview, and if you notice, they played better after that and started blocking better for him. But before that, he had never said anything, just getting destroyed every week. And what did he do, Spread? He still led the Pac-12 at the time in completion percentage, and the next year the Big 12 in completion percentage. He throws one of the most beautiful balls we've seen. We've seen the team blow leads, and at the end in the fourth quarter, he had to make some magic happen and threw some of the most memorable Hail Marys we ever saw. I've never seen a quarterback have the accuracy from 60 yards to scramble around, set up a pass, and know that I'm going to go back shoulder to a guy 60 yards down the field. He's special, man, but and it's his ability to throw the ball is just different. His floor is going to be Jared Goff. His ceiling is Tom Brady, man, because that's who's trained him and that's who's taught him all the secrets of the trade as far as in ball grip, ball placement, anticipation. And you can see it. He throws guys open, and that's something that you can't teach. And also the struggle of going to Jackson State. Jackson State was the floor mat in the SWAC. A lot of people watching the show don't know about the SWAC. I do. I went to Grambling University, man. My whole family went to Grambling University. The SWAC was part of my life. I grew up in Monroe, Louisiana, 45 minutes from the campus. We went to homecoming every year growing up. Grambling was a powerhouse. Southern became a powerhouse later because they were Grambling's rival and were trying to keep up with them, so they started spending more money. A lot of great alumni from Southern was able to put back money into that university. Jackson State was garbage, man. Even when Walter Payton was there, they sucked. I don't even think they won a game in the SWAC the year he was there. Deion wants a job in Florida State. They won't give it to him when he comes from Dallas and says that if you've never coached before, Jackson State takes a shot on him. He implements his program. Immediately you see dividends as they win the SWAC the next year, win the Celebration Bowl before taking a job in Colorado. Go to Colorado. Colorado hasn't won any games. They're 1-11 the year before it gets there. They're predicted to win 2 games the following year by Vegas. They win 4 games, upset TCU in the first game, blow them out, and this TCU was coming out playing in the national championship game. Sooner or later, the talent catches up. This is his first year. Prime does not have his recruits in there. They can't block anybody, so they don't win a lot of big games. The next year, he gets a couple of his recruits in, a couple of his transfers in, and they leap from 4 wins to 8 wins, go to a major bowl game. This kid wins the Walter Camp Award, breaks every record for Colorado for throwing the ball. And guys saying they don't see a pro in that story, it sounds just like a good pro to me, because in the NFL, it's not easy, bro. It's not easy. You're not going to get things your way. And this kid is used to dealing with adversity by having lesser guys blocking for him against better teams. He's used to having the discipline from his father. He has the DNA from his father. His father's told him how to be a pro. And then on top of that, he can text Tom Brady whenever he wants to. Like, the people who can't understand that this guy is a franchise quarterback just have hate in their heart because they don't like the kid. And now I got to look at you and say, why? You know, what kind of person are you? Right? When I break it down like that, people should see it. But if they don't, guess what? We just hope the Raiders get them spread.
All right, yeah, definitely do. I'll review these props real quick. So, obviously, got the game wrong. But on our props, we went, what, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 6?
Yeah.
The really only one, we'll start with the only one we missed. And, hey, I love this one. And it was the Mahomes over on the rushing yards. And once again, you know, just to go back to the original thing, if you were going to beat Kansas City, you were going to blow them out. I didn't see them win a close game. And I think because of the fact that the game wasn't that close, that was one of the main reasons we didn't get over there. I mean, not to mention, at one point, the Eagles had 10 first downs. The Chiefs had run 10 plays. So yeah. Always tough to go over on your offensive props when you don't have the ball.
Yeah, we did good on the props, man. We cashed all types of props.
Yeah, we'll go over the ones we did catch. Xavier Worthy, anytime touchdown, he ended up getting 2. Too bad We didn't go in there for 2. That would have been plus 500. Jalen Hurts, anytime touchdown. Loved that one a lot. That was another cash. DeAndre Hopkins, over 1.5 receptions. Now, did I hear this? Tyler told me yesterday DeAndre Hopkins is retiring. Did you hear that?
I don't know. I wouldn't doubt it if he does, because, I mean, he's made a lot of money, and he's one of those guys that, like, he'll take the Ocho Cinco route. Like, I did the best I could do, but I'm not tripping.
Look, and he's definitely not the player he was when he was in Houston, right?
Yeah, he knows that, bro, because it exposed him with Kansas City that he wasn't, because with Mahomes, he should have popped a lot more than he did.
And I thought he would.
But they did get him a touchdown in the Super Bowl, which was a really good thing. He got a touchdown in the Super Bowl, so.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. And then Saquon under.
Biggest bet of the week. That was my biggest bet. Now on that one, I bet 5.5 units, man. And I went to 5 different shops because I could only bet 1 unit on it. And I went and grabbed it everywhere. That was the best bet. Spagnuolo just doesn't give up 100 yards to running backs. They forgot everything else. Another thing we forgot to do is give props to Jalen Hurts. Let me go back and say real quick, shout out to Jalen Hurts. Shout out to his father, who's a coach in the Channelview area. Shout out to his mother, who's still a teacher. People saying, why does she work? Because they love kids and love giving back, man. That's why they work still. Jalen Hurts is a supremely good guy. Never forget the story that he had with getting benched as the starting quarterback in the national championship game to Tua. And he never cried. He never bitched about it. He was the ultimate teammate. Had to come back later the next year and win a game for them when Tua got hurt. Didn't cry, didn't bitch. Just was always a team first guy, and now he plays the second biggest game of his life. And in both games, he plays the 2 best games of his life. So shout out to Jalen Hurts. He deserves that trip to Disney World.
Yeah, good to see him get credit. And I think it makes the league a little more fun. Let's move into the present. And you got some college basketball.
Before we do that, Spread, we got to stay in the past by one thing.
What's that?
What did you think about the All-Star? New way of doing the All-Star game.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it?
I didn't watch it at all. So here's my analogy for that. Let's just say every time I visit you, you take me to a club, and every time I go to that club, I don't have no fun.
Right.
After about the 5th time you ask me, I'm going to say, you know what? I understand you enjoy that club, but I don't like it. I'm staying home. And I felt the same way about the All-Star, because I've been disappointed. I can't remember the last one I really enjoyed. Maybe the one where they did the Elam ending, where, you know, it was the number of points, and when it was 157 to 155. That one was kind of fun, but I just haven't enjoyed it. So I'm just like, why am I going to do that? And I'm not going to get online. And we talked about the old people complaining.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the kids like it, but I knew I wouldn't, and I didn't want to be negative about it. So I didn't watch it. What did you see in that one?
Oh, you did correct, because my son was in there. I was in there just sounding like the old grouchy man, and my son was just like, things change, Dad.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, pretty much, be quiet. I'm watching the game. But I hated all of it. I more agree with Draymond Green than ever in my life. Because, the Green should not be playing on Sundays. We have to earn that right to do so. Now it's to the point where I came up with a theory, okay? I figured out why the game went bad, but then I figured out why the guy did it. At first, I was kind of ticked with LeBron. That's why I deleted the tweets that I said at first, because what I'm saying is true. What I'm about to say is true, but I also understand why he did it, okay? Before, when we had the league, we had Isaiah, we had Magic Johnson, we had Michael Jordan. They all understood, along with David Stern, the brain trust, that in order for the NBA to be popular, when we do the All-Star game, we have to put on a show for the people. So even though, yeah, all the games weren't competitive, these guys showed incredible skill in the game. You remember spreads, be crazy dunks, these unbelievable passes. But let the kids tell that the guys now are way more skilled. No, the guys now play like robots. They do the same moves a million times until they master it by just doing it over and over. But it's no artistic side to it. The guys back then, everyone had their own game. It was just art. So it looked really more pleasing on TV. Even if it was a blowout, if it was 300 points scored, everyone was giving their best for the fans because they wanted to entertain the fans because they understood the fans kept it going. LeBron got to the point where I think this is stupid. This isn't, they're going to judge me at the end of the day by my legacy and how many championships I get. Now, how many dunk contests I win. I'm not doing a dunk contest. Only thing that can happen to me is bad. Because if I lose, everyone's going to talk about me. So he didn't do the dunk contest. He didn't carry on the tradition that was Dr. J to Jordan to Kobe, right? Okay, so maybe a Magic. But Magic still took part in the skills competition. Magic still.
And Magic couldn't really dunk either, right? I mean,
no, he couldn't dunk, but he made sure.
I mean, he could dunk, but he didn't have hops, right?
Look
I
at
mean,
the passes that he made during the All-Star weekend, though. Some of the great.
No, but players. I'm just saying, it's not like we're like, oh, Magic should have dunked.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody thought that.
Expecting him, right? Right, exactly. Yeah. We weren't expecting him. But we were expecting that out of LeBron. He doesn't come through. So he never takes the All-Star game seriously, right? Now Kobe dies. When Kobe was still in the league, Kobe was kind of pushing him to do right because he wants to keep up with Kobe as because Kobe's everyone looks up to Kobe. You see now how I tell people all the time, real hoopers look at their feet. They wear Kobe's. None of them wear Jordans. They might wear Jordans when they take their girl to the movies, but when they're going to hoop, they're going to play wear Kobe shoes, right? So they love Kobe because he was one of the guys who really dealt with the young players, taught them stuff, gave them the jewels. Kobe dies. Now it's LeBron's league completely because now Kobe's shadow isn't over the league at all. He doesn't give a damn about the All-Star game. Now, who are the other stars now, Spread? SGA, Jokic, Luka. They didn't grow up watching no damn All-Star game. They don't care about it either, right? So now none of the players care. And now it's almost to the point that LeBron really doesn't care and KD doesn't care. You know what I figured out why? Social media Spread. Before Michael Jordan, Magic, and all those guys, Bird, they only dealt with the fans in the arenas when they went on the road. Here, they are supposed to boo you. You're playing a game. Now these guys turn on their phone, and it's 2 million people telling them they suck, they're pedophiles, your ass, I hope your kids die, I hate your family. So do you think I want to go perform and entertain these assholes and make them happy? So LeBron has a grudge, KD has a grudge with the fans because of social media and social media showing how a lot of these people really think about them. And that's what I think was happened to the All-Star game.
Yeah, I just don't think it's going to come back. And one of the issues I think was, you know, we were growing up. I remember when League Pass came out, but I was already an adult. We didn't have it when I was a kid. So you didn't get to see these guys. Right. Right. They played on Saturday morning, maybe a Sunday game. And, you know, for me, when they came to Sacramento, right, you try and get Celtics tickets, you want to see Bird. The Bulls, we had a little thing where we all split season tickets and we had a little draft. And Bulls were always the number one pick, right? You know, you had to get number one to go see Jordan. And I think that has something to do with it, too. But I don't think it's coming back. You know, and they're saying, I haven't played for $1 million. I don't know if there's anything they can do to make this come back. So
I think it's going to come back next year. And the reason why it was so embarrassing with the Kevin Hart shit that I think that...
I think that's why he pulled out. I think when he found out, you're going to have this guy talk while we're playing?
Yeah, I think LeBron got ticked about that too. And now that's why I said I had to kind of pivot on going so hard on him because I had to see his point of view too. And I think that you're right about that. Like, this is a clown show. You got the kids playing on Sunday. You know, like, we had to earn the right.
You're making jokes while we're playing.
And then, not only that, do you remember how prestigious it used to be the MVP of the All-Star game?
Yeah.
Like, so they have to find that again. It all started when they did that Team LeBron, Team KD shit. Ever since then, that just keep it East and West. Guys used to care about representing their coast, you know. So I think that next year is going to come back because I've already seen Ja Morant seem like he's going to get involved. And he says Giannis is saying that he's going to get involved if Ja does. And now Aaron Gordon saying he's going to get involved. We see if Zach LaVine does. That's a hell of a dunk contest. And I'm also hearing them talk about doing a one-on-one contest. That's something that people have been waiting to see. That can be something huge if they could pull that one off.
Who would you pick if they had one?
One-on-one right now in the NBA.
I'll tell you, I'd pick KD.
I was going to say that, but crazy as it sounds, man, it probably would still be LeBron if he's healthy, because what he's going to do is he's going to bully you. Like, who's going to stop him from going to the
front? We saw that in that one finals. He can't contest that KD shot.
He can, KD's but not too KD tall. Can't miss, though.
What's up?
KD can't miss, though, because LeBron is going to back
I just don't think he will, though. Like, you can't double. There's no double team coming. It's just one guy to beat.
Kyrie and Curry, if they do about
I don't think class, a small guy can win it.
I think they should do about it, like, by, like, maybe class, like, by height class.
Yeah, they should, actually. They should do a less than 6'6 and a 6'6 and over or something.
That would be dope. Now, if they do that, I think we'd come back. Because I'm not going to just give up hope, but I can tell you one thing. Adam Silver has a huge disconnect with the base of the NBA. And the base of the NBA is hoopers, because that's the only ones who can still stomach watching the product, because they love watching basketball so much they still watch it.
Right. Yeah.
And bettors, sports bettors. Sports bettors are mostly manly men. You know how we are. We those type of guys. So he has to figure out a way to It's, right now, he's doing too much stuff for the sponsorships and to stay politically correct instead of making it about competition. So hopefully he can figure that part out. He doesn't look like a guy who's dealt with a lot of pushback in his life. I don't know his story or anything like that. I heard David Stern kind of handpicked him and already told him that he was going to be the guy. Then he put him in there before he even died, right? Before Stern passed, right? So he's been the commissioner a really long time, but people were saying, like, how do you get rid of a commissioner? But the owners aren't going to move them when they're making the most money they've ever made. You know they're making the most money because the players are getting paid the most. If I'm paying you $50 million, think about it, guys. How much money am I making? If I could pay you $50 million and you're a bum, you don't do anything. So we'll see, man. I hope that things get better because we all love the game of basketball, especially on the wagering world. Let's jump into the present spread.
All right, but let's move to college basketball world. Alabama heads to Missouri. Pretty short spread here. Missouri laying 1.5. What do you got in this one?
Yeah, this was going to be a really exciting matchup. Man, the SEC's turned from a football conference is now – got to say the Big Ten is on top in football, and the SEC is now the best basketball conference in the whole United States. So they switched positions, because you remember it used to be the other way around. These are really two dynamite teams. Both can really score, play up tempo basketball. Missouri is really good at home, man. 16-1 at home, but you know Alabama's coming off the upset loss to Auburn at home. Well, I guess it wasn't an upset. Yeah, they were favored. So I took Auburn that game. I feel like Auburn is the better team. Felt like Alabama struggled with their height, and they ended up doing so. But they're coming off only their fourth loss of the year. As I said, only one loss on the road this season in conference, man. And now they got to go to Missouri. But, bro, I'm a big fan of Missouri. That one loss they had was against A&M. With that number saying that Missouri – is laying points to a very public and popular Alabama team that puts up a lot of points. Missouri going 8-2 against the spread. And me really just liking Dennis Gates and where that Missouri team is going. I really like their offense, man. They have some transfers in. They transferred in that one kid from Iowa that's a really good player in Perkins, man. And they have a bunch of shooters around them. They also have a really good forward that transferred in as well from Texas. I'm going to roll with Missouri to get it done at home, man. I think that even though it's difficult to imagine Alabama losing two straight, the SEC is a gauntlet, man. And I think that Missouri will be really fired up at home for this game. So give me Missouri as an official play. I'll just do the money line at minus 130.
Sounds good. Vanderbilt heading to Kentucky. Take on the Wildcats. Wildcats laying 5 points. Who do you like?
This line in itself is telling you what type of team Vandy is. I've been a fan of them. I've been betting them a lot lately. Really big on their backcourt. They got Jason Edwards, who I don't know how this ended up happening, but, man, he plays exactly like Darius Garland. I don't know if they're close to each other. I need to look it up and find out, but his game is literally just like Darius Garland's spread. You know, Darius Garland just went to the All-Star Games, having a phenomenal year at Cleveland, but he came from Vanderbilt as well, but they have a guard that plays just like a man, shoots a really high percentage, a 50, 40, 90 guy, just like Garland and Jason Edwards, and they also have transfer A.J. Hoggard, who's a really strong, physical point guard, makes a lot of good decisions. Sometimes he does, at the end of the game, try to be superhero and shoot it just a little bit too much, but I like the way that Vandy puts the ball in the hole. I also think that Kentucky's a really talented team. Mark Pope, first year running things in Kentucky, now that Calipari is gone. But I don't know if he's going to have his point guard back tonight, who transferred in from San Diego State, because he's kind of the guy who makes things go for them. And Butler, oh, he's out. Yeah, Butler's out tonight. That's why the line is so low. Butler's out, and they also lost Kirk Crusher, who transferred over from Arizona. And they also lost, so they're missing all three of their point guards. Jackson Robinson, who transferred from BYU, three really solid players. With that said, man, it looks like Vanderbilt's going to cover this game and maybe pull off the money line, man. That it's baked into the line with it only being 5 points for a team that's going to always be looked at by the public as, you know, just a doormat. No one's thinking Vanderbilt's a better program than Kentucky. But this year, they have even par with them on players, especially with all the injuries to Kentucky. So give me Vanderbilt, man. I think Vanderbilt plus 5.5 is what I'm seeing, and minus 120 is a play.
All right, liking Vanderbilt there. Let's move on. another SEC matchup, Arkansas Razorbacks taking on the Auburn Tigers. Pretty big spread here, 15.5 points that Auburn is laying. Who do you like?
I don't know, man. Calipari is starting to have his team playing better. They go from not covering 5 straight games by only a half a point at A&M. 16 points is just too much, especially with the talent that I've seen on that Arkansas team. They do have some guys that can put the ball in the hole. He has some transfers over there from Kentucky, including DJ Wagner over there with him. You know, his father played in the pros and everything. He was a big-time recruit. He also brought in Janelle Davis from Florida Atlantic, who was a really solid player for Florida Atlantic. He's been all right there. I think that he should have probably followed his coach to Michigan like his center did. But you know how it is. This is the first year that Calipari is there. He's just now getting settled in. He hasn't paid his guys yet that he's going to pay, you know, to bring in the superstars. I'm sure they'll have a phenomenal freshman class next year. But he does have a guy that I really like in Adoo Thirio. And he's a really tough player, and I think he keep them within the number. I know Auburn's good, man. Really explosive team. If they get on you, kind of snowballs. But, man, 16 points just is a lot of points. So I lean Arkansas. I probably won't play it, but I'd play Arkansas plus 16 if I was going to play this one.
Let's move to the National Basketball Association. Only one game tonight if the NBA returns from their All-Star break. The beleaguered Charlotte Hornets will be in Los Angeles taking on the Lakers. I actually did some research on this one yesterday. And I'm thinking that LaMelo Ball is playing, because that's why this line moved. It was 13.5, and it's all the way down to 12 at certain spots. Still seeing a game time decision here on RotoWire. But it's an interesting matchup, I guess, for the Hoopers, right? And the Gamblers.
Right.
So when we look at Charlotte, they're 26-24 against the spread this year, 11-11 against the spread on the road, but they're 26-17 against the spread as an underdog. So where they've really had problems is when they're laying points. They're six. They've been catching between 12 and 15, right? Because they're not a very good team. They're in 14th place in their conference. They're 6-3 when they've caught between 12 and 15. The Lakers are 28-24 against the spread this year, 16-9. ATS against the spread at home. So Lakers, fade them on the road, bet them at home. And they've laid between 12 and 15 twice. They covered in both those. So the Hornets cover when they catch a lot, and the Lakers cover when they're laying a lot here. Good way, you know, I think you make a good argument for both teams here. I just simply think this is going to be too much points, especially for a team that has some injury issues, right? So when this game is decided, it might not be the starters that are deciding it for Los Angeles. Assuming they get out to a 20-point lead, Luka and LeBron are on the bench at the end. But if you're Charlotte, why am I taking out some of these young players, right? Like Nick Smith, Josh Green, Miles Bridges. Is it a Mark Williams revenge game after being denied the trade?
They're saying he's personal. Is he playing?
He's a game-time decision as well. Okay. But my point is I think Charlotte will give you the full 48. Lakers, you might only get 40. If you want to pin me down to a side here, I'm taking the points. What do you think?
Only play for me on this game would be Lakers first half. The Hornets have been kind of bad at the beginning of the game. They were down by 20 to the Lakers last time they played in the first quarter. But also Lonzo Ball got hurt that game. I'm not betting sorry team. So I'd probably cut this game in half to go Lakers first half.
And I agree with that too. One of the main reasons I like the points in the Charlotte handicap is just we already know Luka's working his way back from an injury. LeBron, I mean, there's no reason to keep them in. I wouldn't be surprised to see both those guys 32, 33 minutes. I would say under on their props, but there's a good chance that they both have huge statistical amounts, even in less minutes. So,
yeah,
that's why I'm not going there. Like I said, I don't love this game, but force me to take a side. I'll take Charlotte. Tomorrow night, the Los Angeles Clippers take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Your guy, Ty Lue, man, continues to work wonders. To me, he's still the most underrated coach in the league. I think that the hoopers and the betters, we properly rate him. But, you know, doesn't really get the respect that Popovich and Kerr do and some of these other guys. I really like Ty Lue here. I'm trying to think. Do you have a number up for this one?
Yeah, it's minus 1.5.
So basically just pick the winner here, huh?
Yeah.
So I haven't done a lot on this game yet. Tell me what you think.
Just off the top of my dome, I like where the Clippers are going better than I like where the Bucks are going in this game, man. As you said, it is after the break, so I think that a lot of people come to play. I'd probably focus more on the props on this one than anything. I think I'd probably go with Dame Lillard to go over 25.5 points in this one. It'll be a game that probably goes down to the wire. They're going to have to rely on his scoring even to be competitive. So give me over on Dame Lillard on this one.
Yeah, and just a couple of the numbers to go along with these teams. Clippers, much better for us bettors this year. 31-22 against the spread, where the Bucks, you know, even though they're doing pretty good this year, only 24-29 against the spread. Bucks 13-13 against the spread at home, only 17-21 as the favorite. While Los Angeles is 13-11 against the spread as an underdog. So, you know what? If I was catching more points, I'd be all over the Clippers here. If you really force me down to it, probably take the Clippers, because I think if I ran numbers, I haven't done them yet, but I think they would spit out the Clippers. Not something I love, though, catching a rested Milwaukee team.
Right.
Last game we have. This is a fun one, right? You know, the old guard versus the new guard, right? KD and the Suns head to San Antonio to take on the Spurs, and shows you what problems the Suns have had this year as they're in the play-in right around now. Spurs are actually laying 3 at home in this one. I'll have to pull up the injury report here real quick. Do you have an idea? Are we going to be missing some Suns here? Because this kind of says to me that we might be.
Yeah, because I'm seeing 2.5 right now. They're saying Booker's day to day. They're saying that Beal's day to day, and they're saying that Grayson Allen is also day to day spread.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too, and even newcomer Cody Martin is on this injury report. So maybe that's the reason San Antonio's laying 3 here. I'm going to look up. You break it down real quick, and then I'll give you some of their against the spread numbers this year.
But, man, the NBA is so janky right now. Like, it's hard to even.
I usually take this week off, man. Going into the All-Star and going out of the All-Star is rough. You don't know what these guys did. Who's coming in after doing Molly for 4 straight days? I'm not joking.
Yeah, the Suns just are a really weird team right now to even look to bet, because what the hell are you doing? Okay, so you got KD saying it's no problem in the locker room and calling out Ramona Shelburne saying she's lying. You got Booker always saying he's going to be traded. You got Beal, who nobody wants, who they tried to trade, and he wouldn't allow him to trade him. So it's just a lot of weird scenarios there. Then you got San Antonio, the baby asshole and the OG asshole, because I already didn't like Wembanyama because he made that funny face when against the Rockets when he didn't want them to draft him. But now he goes out, him and Chris Paul, and try to cheat in a freaking contest. Like, come on, man. Like, you guys are that slimy. Like, Chris Paul wondering why he never won anything. And he's passing on these bad traits to Wembanyama. But with that said, I think that they're going to have their mind on trying to have a good performance at home. I'm going with the over, most likely, on this game. I don't think neither one of these teams is going to play much defense. First game back, as you said, San Antonio had went over on five straight games until the last game. Somehow they magically went under against Boston, but that's because Boston plays defense and held them to 103. I think that Phoenix has a whole bunch of mess going on in this locker room, so I think that this can definitely go over 230.
Yeah, and one thing we know about Phoenix this year, hasn't been good if you're a Phoenix backer. 19-34 against the spread this year. Spurs, if Phoenix wasn't so bad, the Spurs number wouldn't be that good. They're 24-28 against the spread.
But that Spurs 12-13 to the over.
Pardon? Yeah, I was going to pull up the over-under since you gave that. Both teams have played more over than under this year. Phoenix has had 28 games go over, 26 go under. San Antonio, 29 over, only 22 to the under here. Phoenix also 18-9 to the over on the road. So that might be the best way to look at this game. Phoenix is an interesting story, man. I just, talk about a blown opportunity. It almost feels like the way that Westbrook trade destroyed Los Angeles. That Beal trade just ended the window.
I just don't understand James Jones doing what he did. Like,
I don't think he did, because so he originally didn't want to do it.
What happened? I just don't understand what happened with one, their coach Monty. You know, I don't know what happened with him, and how did he fall out so bad with Ayton that it kind of just tore down the whole core? Like, what makes you say, I'm going to get rid of Mikal Bridges, I'm going to get rid of Cam Johnson? Like, you hit gold in the drafts. I just don't get it.
And for a smart guy, why doesn't someone tell KD, hey, if you want to go to a team, stop making them trade everything you have to go there. Why don't you just wait to become a free agent?
When is he just joining him? Because he's trying to get to Houston.
I'm just saying, you know,
and
both
I don't
times.
Want them to come mess up our team, bro. I don't want to give them jack. They can only have like the veterans, like Fred Van Fleet, Aaron Holiday, Tate. They can have those guys. You cannot have any of our core guys.
If they trade KD, it's a full on rebuild. So they're going to
They can have, what's his name?
They're going to want all those picks, because you guys got extra picks, don't you? Like Brooklyn picks?
Yeah, they can get those picks. They can have Reed Shepard, too. I still don't understand what the hell we were thinking about it through taking him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. But just so you guys know, as an experienced NBA bettor, if I wasn't doing content, I take the week between Christmas and New Year's off to wacky time. And I usually take the time going into the All-Star and definitely a little bit of time going in the All-Star off. Because like I said, we don't know who's doubling down on their game in the gym, working on stuff, getting up early, 8 hours of sleep, and who was, you know, doing drugs in Cabo. So, you know, I give them a little while to get everything out of their system. All right, let's move to the future, five-star. NFL draft is coming up, and I had texted you yesterday because I'm looking for some diamonds in the rough on these best ball drafts that are starting up. Two rookie tight ends I really like are Tyler Warren and Harold Fannin. I mean, Tyler Warren might be a better prospect than Brock Bowers, and Harold Fannin has some good numbers too. Talk to me about what your outlook for these two young players is.
I'm a fan of both. definitely a fan of both. With the kid from Penn State, I do like his physicality. I want to see how his speed translates to the NFL. That's the next thing that I want to find out about him. Like, are you able to run past linebackers and safeties like you do in college? That's the main thing. I know that he can block, he can do a lot of things, he can throw the football and all that stuff. I really like this kid, Harold Fannin Jr. I bet a lot of Mac football, as you know, Spread. I've been watching this kid play since 2022. He's started since his very first year there. They used him as an H-back at first. Then after that, his sophomore year, he jumped to 44 receptions, 623 yards, 6 touchdowns. And then his junior year, he really delivered what was pretty historic for tight ends, as he broke a lot of records, multiple FBS records. He set single season receiving yards by a tight end. He finished with 1,555. He also finished with 117 receptions. Like, this kid was outstanding, man. You know, and that tied Devontae Smith's record. I just think that he's the one that whoever grabs him with the right quarterback, they're going to be pleasantly surprised that they ran into a Hall of Famer. And guess where the kid was born at, Spread?
I don't know.
Canton, Ohio.
Oh, wow. There we go.
Played high school in Canton, Ohio. So he's one of those kids where it's kind of destined, man. 6'4", 230, has to run every bit of a 4'6". Unbelievable ball skills. We've seen a lot of Tyler Warren. A lot of people haven't seen a lot of this guy. I really, really hope that somehow the Texans could get this kid. He would be phenomenal with us, with his ability to outrun. I have no words about him being able to get open. He's like Brock Bowers to me. He's a can't-miss situation. Tyler Warren, I think that he's going to be good, but I haven't seen a lot of wiggle in his hips, and that's what troubles me about him. He's, to me, more of a straight-line runner. Well, I think he's going to do good on seams and also yards after the catch, kind of more of a Kittle type, you know, and how's Kittle doing? He's done really well. So he reminds me of a Kittle type. So very physical, strong after the catch, makes difficult catches, you know, fights for the ball. But Harold Fannin Jr. is one of those guys that's that kind of smooth route runner, creates great matchup problems for you in the pass game. So I'd personally lean more Harold Fannin Jr.
All right, two young tight ends for you guys to look out for. And as this offseason continues, I'm going to keep throwing five-star a couple players here and there, and so we can get his player evaluations here on the Wagering World. But let's go. Let's actually give out some picks. I'm going to just let you take this one on your own. But if you were to make a bet right now, the proverbial $100, I give you $100, you bet one team to win the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship. Who do you think has the best value if you were to place that bet today?
The best value pick right now for the NCAAs would probably be, I'd say, Tennessee. Iowa State's also a good shot at 1,500, but not so much. So what I like about Tennessee is they lock you down and they can shoot the three. What I worry about is Rick Barnes, but they're at 20-1 right now. So you can get $2,000 off $100 with them. As far as the upper teams, I worry about my Cougars. They're at plus 850, but unfortunately, we cannot put the ball in the basket. Florida's going to be a tough out in the NCAAs, strictly because the greatness of Walter Clayton. A lot of people don't know, man, Rick Pitino is a wizard. He was at Iona. Pitino was at Iona. And when he was at Iona, bro, I knew about Walter Clayton and I knew about Nelly Jr. Joseph. I was like, these guys can really play. They ended up where he goes to St. John's, brings St. John's back with the help of getting the kid from Seton Hall to transfer to him to play point guard. But he sends Walter Clayton to Florida, back to where he's from. He's able to make his name for himself at Iona to get back to Florida. He was a top recruit in football. No one thought that he could play basketball good enough. But the kid is a supreme talent. He kind of reminds me of what's my guy's name that plays for Orlando.
Suggs?
He kind of reminds me of Suggs. Yeah, he kind of reminds me of Suggs. A little bit better shooting ability, but that leadership qualities are definitely there. So Florida has a chance because of Walter Clayton. And Pitino has St. John's up here where they're one of the top contenders in this, was his second year over there, rebuilt that team. He said Nelly Jr. Joseph to his son in New Mexico, who has a really good team. I like that squad a lot. They got a kid, Den, over there, and a kid, what was the other kid? True Washington. Both of those guys can put the ball in the basket. So watch for New Mexico for some upsets when you get into the NCAAs. Another team, they got Auburn up here, but I think the Duke is better than Auburn. Duke really has no flaws. If they play their game correctly, they can beat anyone in the country. Most talented team. It's all about whether Cooper Flagg is able to finish things. What they make a mistake of, in my opinion, is they should use Cooper Flagg when they're in close games at the end to facilitate and to get it to their shooters, because they got some knockdown shooters in Proctor, Neipel, however you say his name, Con Neipel, I think I said his name, knockdown shooter, freshman, and they have another kid who comes off the bench. These guys are lights out. They've been, the games that they've lost close have been because at the end they try to allow this kid to go one-on-one. You know, they try to blow him up and, you know, make him a star instead of just playing within a system. If they play within that system, no one can beat Duke. So Duke at plus 400 is probably the best bet.
All right. If we were to do the same exercise in the NBA, there's two teams in the West that I'm targeting.
Okay.
I like the Denver Nuggets at plus 1,100. Jokic is still arguably the best player in the world. And if Michael Porter is going to continue his development, all they need is some good scrappy role play. And with the West the way it is right now, I can see him getting out of there. And if there's one team that Boston would struggle to match up with, I think it's Denver, just because they have all that great perimeter defense, maybe a little vulnerable in the middle. The other one I'm looking at is Dallas at plus 4,400. The big problem with the Luka trade is the long-term aspect of it. But if this was me and you were just playing a 2K season and we were going to turn it off at the end of the year, would have been an equal trade, and maybe even better for Dallas. So when I'm looking at this year, of course, you know, it was disappointing that Davis got hurt in his Mavericks debut, but it looks like he's not going to need surgery. He should be back, and at plus 4,400, you're going to have plenty of hedging opportunities if they can even just get out of the first round. So I like the Mavericks and the Nuggets as futures to win the NBA championship right now.
I like that a lot, Spread. So what did they say exactly with Anthony Davis? What's going on with that injury?
So they originally did like an MRI to determine if he needed surgery, and it doesn't look like he will, which means he's on rehab, probably middle of March, April, that he comes back. So the team just got to stay in contention until then.
Okay, and I'm going to approach this one a little bit different. I like the Clippers to win the Pacific Division. Mm-hmm. They're one game out with the Lakers right now. I think we're going to see the Lakers mail in more games than we'll see the Clippers going forward. As we said before, you got Luka dealing with injuries, you got LeBron, and also I think that they pretty much feel like if they get in the tournament, they have a chance whether they're on the road or not. Whereas, and I think that Ty Lue is going to kind of concentrate on winning that division and getting better home field advantage, because he spoke about it a lot last year about the fact that we're going to need Kawhi Leonard and, at the time, Paul George to play more games to help out Harden. Because, look, these guys got to understand that regular season matters. He's like, we keep getting in these situations where we're getting these game sevens on the road. So I think he's going to take a little bit more serious. So at plus 270 for the Clippers to win the Pacific Division, I think that's a really, really good number. As you see, Kawhi Leonard is back, and he's just now getting back to his game. Another thing I like about the Clippers a lot is that the Clippers will actually play defense. You know, a lot of these teams, man, they're not going to play defense, whereas in the Clippers are. And I also think, I don't know if they can win the championship if they got there, but I do think that they have a chance to win the West. You look at the West, you got the kids up top, Rockets, Thunder, Grizzlies. I don't expect much from those teams in the playoffs. The Thunder a little bit. But still, at the end of the day, I think that what rears his head for the Thunders, they're still kind of light in the ass. You know, like, people don't realize that Chet is a thin guy, man. I think they're going to have to get another athletic big to go beside him and let him more become a four, like Anthony Davis is doing with the Mavs. Because I just don't think that they're going to be able to stop guys like LeBron on a rim run or Jokic, you know. So I think that the Nuggets is a great pick by you. The Lakers are a good pick at plus 575 off the fact that we know that if LeBron's healthy and Luka is healthy, they're going to be able to outwit people and play and make plays. Same with the Clippers. When you need a basket at the end of the game, who else do you want more than James Harden creating for you and getting you either an easy look and open shot to Norm Powell or to Kyrie Leonard, or being able to take it himself for either a lob to the rim to a big, or, you know, for a floater. So I think that situational basketball is huge in the playoffs. Situationally, I love Denver at +550 to win the Western Conference. I love the Lakers +575. I like the Clippers +1800. Just like you saw an All-Star game, it's always about the OGs. The vets are going to always be able to outthink and outmuscle the kids. So that's what I like on that one.
All right, there we have it. Ball and Parlay, who you got for us?
Man, we're going with Clara Towson, man. I think that Clara Towson is on fire right now. Beating Sabalenka has to give her a lot of confidence moving forward. She's going to face Linda Noskova. Noskova's a good player. She's kind of topsy-turvy. Great win over Pagulia last match. I think that this one goes three sets, but I think that Towson does out-hit her. Towson is one of those kind of ladies that gets hot during the week and she can win any tournament. She just had some success against Noskova at the Australian Open, and I was able to take her and win. She came back from a set down. I think that Towson being able to kind of pile on to that early experience will be able to push her through, and also, as I said, her being successful against Sabalenka. So give me Clara Towson at +120. And also, I'm going to roll the Missouri Tigers tonight. I think that they get it done at home, and I think that they pound the Alabama in that game, and I think that Gates and those guys show everyone that Missouri is a really good team this year.
All right, we talked about it earlier. I said you got to be wary of sides this time of year in the NBA. Let's play that total. Suns, Spurs, over. A lot of good things trending in that direction. And if they have been partying, the defense is going to be the first to go. So give me the Spurs and Suns over tomorrow night.
Hey, guys, we're so happy to be back with you. End of the day, we give out sports betting and we give out plays, and that's kind of our lane, but also we like to talk about other things, and we always love to chop it up with you in the wager world. You guys hit that like if you're happy to be back in the wager world rocking with us. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. Get everyone to subscribe. The channel's growing and we appreciate it. Anything for the people, spread before we get out of here.
Man, good to be back talking some sports.
Always good to talk some sports. As always, guys, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know. That's my father, John H. Lindsay. Seno will hopefully be back on Friday if we can find him.
Hey, put out the APB.
Yeah, we put out. I know where the APB at. It found blue. Hey, man. For spread us there, I'm 5-star in Vegas. It's always us versus the machine, guys. Feel free to reach out to DM anytime. I'm always there to help you on any of your betting questions and betting needs. We're always available for you to sign up for different packages as well. Go to www.thewageringworld.com now and subscribe to get some free plays. And also check out the merchandise. This is The Waging World.